The Mitchell's Front Page Podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11.
On the line is the State MP for Geelong, Christine Cousins. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you going?
Good, thank you. How are you feeling about everything that we're seeing and even the front page of the paper today, you know, which it's probably very dramatic in terms of when people pick it up and see, well, we're being flanked by these LGAs with high COVID cases.
Oh, yes. And, you know, obviously there is significant concern amongst our community. But in saying that, you know, our community is doing the right thing overall. You know, I'm heartened by people's strong view that, you know, we have to be safe and, you know, social distancing and wearing masks and, you know, staying at home, all those things Geelong people are putting in place, and I really appreciate what they're doing. But, you know, you're right, you know, Colac at one end and Wyndham at the other. You know, it is cause for concern, but at this point in time, we're not calling on a lockdown for Geelong.
And no one wants to look into a crystal ball and things could change tomorrow. But should Geelong residents feel uneasy about that prospect, do you think?
Oh, look, I think some people do. I mean, it's interesting. You know, I have a lot of people saying to me, we should lock down now.
Yes.
And other people saying, you know, they're prepared to wait and see and take the advice of the chief medical officer and the experts that know what they're talking about. So, you know, there are different views. Certainly there, you know, particularly businesses out there, the stress related to that uncertainty for them is, you know, really, it's making it very tough for them.
And you would have seen the videos, I'm sure, over the weekend of people in Melbourne challenging the masks and saying, I don't have to wear a mask and it's my right not to, and giving the police officers and the frontline retail workers quite a hard time in the process. Are we having more trouble this time around with enforcement and making sure that we are compliant? And, of course, we had that famous incident of the lady at Little River refusing to say why she was coming down and getting through that police checkpoint. So is there a new attitude that we perhaps didn't have with the first lockdown?
No, I don't think that's right. I think there were those people that seem to think that it's their human rights being impacted on. You know, there have been, those people have been around for quite some time. And as, you know, local MPs, we've had to deal with them as well. Mm. But I think, you know, overall, it's a minor number of people. And, you know, I think they're being very selfish and quite ridiculous in their claims. You know, and as the Premier pointed out yesterday, I think it was in the media conference, you know, you would want the nurse in ICU wearing a mask while they're taking care of you. You know, I can't comprehend the view of these people, that people are dying. You know, people are getting seriously ill. And we know that there are after effects for some people in terms of, you know, respiratory problems, heart and lung problems. You know, so they might recover from the virus, but there are those areas that are still of major concern. You know, like, people need to think about what they're doing and start looking after the community overall.
And are you saying all Geelong people should wear a mask every time they go out, even though it's not mandatory down here yet?
I think they need to wear a mask where they can't socially distance. In sort of crowded supermarkets or shops, you know, we're not in a position where we are mandated to wear a mask in Geelong, but I think people are doing the right thing. You know, my office is located near the Safeway supermarket. You know, people going in and out of there, the vast majority of them are wearing a mask. So, you know, because you're in an environment where you may not be able to socially distance. So I think people are being sensible. You know, they're concerned about what's happening in the community, about spreading the virus. So they're doing the right thing.
Now, in terms of the test return times, I'm hearing that it is taking towards a week for people to get their results back. I know someone that went and got a test last Saturday and only found out on Friday that they were negative, and other people are reporting similar return times. I'm just wondering if people are reticent to perhaps go and get a test because they know they'll have to isolate once they do get that test for potentially 7 days. Is there a way we can make the test return times faster?
Yeah, and that's constantly being worked on, you know, and I think unfortunately there have been some delays, and a lot of that is the vast volume of testing that's being done. So, you know, I mean, if people feel unwell, they should get tested. You know, there are provisions in place to support people financially and food-wise, the care packages, all that is still in place. So, you know, and honestly, I think the vast majority of people, as much as it is an inconvenience or a drama for them to go and get tested, they are getting tested and they are staying at home in isolation until they get their test results back. So, you know, I understand the challenges and the distress and the inconvenience that this causes, but we're talking about people's lives here.
Now, in terms of the truth and justice process to shift, I read an interesting statement from you that said that the Victorian government will establish a truth and justice process to formally recognise historic wrongs and will address ongoing injustices for Aboriginal Victorians. Can you explain how that works and what it will achieve?
Yeah, so we did announce that, and that's in line with, you know, what we're doing around Treaty and the First Nations People's Assembly. So the Assembly, you know, which is the first democratically elected body for Aboriginal people in Australia, operating in Victoria, they're going to play a key role in developing the truth and justice process for Aboriginal people. It's, for me personally, it's probably one of the first things that needs to happen. You know, we need to have that truth telling and we need the justice outcomes from that. You know, this is an important piece of work that will be developed by the Assembly. It won't be developed by government overall. It will be developed by First Nations people. And, you know, it's about identifying the stories, the history that we know has occurred. It's, you know, acknowledging the past human rights violations and the ongoing injustices towards Aboriginal people in Victoria. And, you know, having since announced that, I've had many Aboriginal people right around Victoria, in fact, contact me with their stories and, like, horrific stories around, you know, the stolen children, having their language taken away from them, you know, the abuses that they've suffered, you know, knowledge of massacres that have occurred. I mean, this is the truth, the truth-telling that we need to have to be able to acknowledge what's happened and have the justice that's needed in our Victorian community.
So if someone wants to raise an issue like that, how will it work?
Yeah, so the Assembly will develop the process.
I see.
Yeah, so, and they are currently working on that. So, as I said, this is not something the government's saying this is what's going to happen. The Assembly will develop the process and Aboriginal Victorians will be able to tell their story and we'll be also looking at the history that's occurred in this state.
And how is the Assembly going? Because it's probably been affected by COVID like everything else. Are they just meeting online or, you know, what do they do to overcome these challenges?
Yeah, they are meeting online. So they're continuing their work and, you know, I have to say they're doing an absolutely amazing job. They've got a huge task, very challenging, but they have taken it on and are working very hard. So, you know, they're dealing with not only the framework of treaty, but also, as we just mentioned, the truth and justice process, the redress scheme, which we announced some months ago. So there's a lot of work that's going on in that space.
Now, I see that the City of Greater Geelong is receiving state government funding for 300 new jobs. In what area will those jobs be?
Well, my understanding is that they will be right across the board. So, you know, it may be within their outdoor areas, you know. I'm just trying to think of the right word.
The maintenance, you know, teams, that sort of
thing.
Yeah, gardens and yep.
Gardens, parks and gardens, thank you. Those sorts of areas. Wherever, you know, there's a need, they'll be putting workers in place. So, I mean, this is a great opportunity for Geelong. It's a great opportunity for a few hundred people to find work. There are about 30% of the employees at the City of Greater Geelong that, you know, were stood down.
Yes.
Some months ago, that will be put back into work. And then there'll be, my understanding, you know, the remainder of that will be new employees, which is great for Geelong.
Is this because the council, I believe, is not eligible for the federal schemes like the JobKeeper payment?
Yes, that's right. So local government was not included in the JobKeeper scheme, so it limited local government on what they could do. So this, you know, what we've done as a state is ensure that local government have access to additional resources and funding.
And Geelong Roads, I see that there's a few road upgrades happening across the electorate during this time. Do you want to give us some examples?
Yeah, so there is a lot of work happening, and Aberdeen Street in my electorate down the top end is having some major works done. And, you know, this is a good opportunity for us to get on with some of these road jobs that need to be done while there's less people on the road. So, you know, obviously in Geelong we're a bit more active now that we're not in lockdown, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. You know, it's creating jobs, it's keeping people in work, and that's a really good thing.
And I'm just interested in the council elections, of course, they're just around the corner. Mm-hmm. How do you think we should encourage more people to run when to try and campaign in traditional ways in a COVID era? It's quite a daunting process. And I think there's different initiatives like Women in Local Democracy, etc. But you know a little bit about campaigning. Any thoughts?
Yeah, look, I think social media is probably one of the key campaign tools that we have at the moment. You know, the challenge is getting to people who, you know, don't access social media,
yes.
Particularly older people. So, you know, my view is getting on the phone and ringing those people, you know. Mm. I think, you know, if you genuinely want to be a candidate in this election, then you need to be out there in whatever way possible. And given the restrictions with COVID-19, I think, you know, people have to think of new ways of doing that.
Interesting times ahead. Thank you for being on the program, and we'll talk
to you
again next month.
No worries. Thanks, Mitch.
Thank you, Christine. Bye. Cousins there, State MP for Geelong.
The Mitchell's Front Page podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 to 11. Or search for Mitchell's Front Page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you get your podcasts.